When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
These are the Keishi tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Keishi, the longest running rock station in the country.
Welcome to the Keishi tapes podcast. I'm John Hewlett.
I'm Favaz.
Hey, episode what?
I don't know, 520?
Are we at 150 yet? I'm just
curious. Oh, we're way past that. We're almost at 180.
What?
Yes, almost 4 years.
Oh my
It'll
gosh.
Be 4 years that we've been doing this. Come this October.
Kidding me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Well, we got another good one here.
We thought it would only last a couple of years.
I know. And we're still finding some good interviews.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I just recently found a couple from one from the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell them yet, should I?
I think you should. I think you should.
Tease.
We teased it on the air.
Yeah.
You gave the names out.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I found a 1978 interview I did with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is a big deal.
And I found another 1980 interview with Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues.
Yeah. Those will be coming up.
Yeah, and there's other stuff, too. And this one is another Jack Silver interview. Jack Silver used to get these interviews for a weekend thing he used to do on the air called the Keishi Rock Report.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would use little snippets of the interviews and put them into these reports.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the interviews that he's doing, they were not done on the air. So, you know, you don't want to get too critical of him when he's, you know, kind of stammering.
Oh, come on, that's fun.
That is fun. But sometimes he'll stammer around trying to think of a question, but he's not under the gun, under
right,
the pressure,
right,
you know, being on
right.
the air. So, you know, it's very casual. And when he started the David Freiberg interview that we did last week on the podcast,
mm-hmm.
David Freiberg of Jefferson Starship, we kind of gave him some crap because he came out with a question right away that was, yeah, it's not one you would start with. You know?
And he even admitted to it on the tape. He said, I don't want to get off this interview off to a rocky start.
Yeah.
Well, why ask it?
I know.
You know.
Yeah, wait till later in the interview ask it. You don't want to start with it. And then I'm on the same tape, rolling forward, is his interview that he did with Billy Squire.
Mm-hmm.
And that one gets off to kind of a rocky start from whatever Jack said to him. And what Jack said to him is not on the tape. It just kind of picks up with Billy mm-hmm. responding to what Jack said.
All right, here,
so here we go. We don't know how long this interview is or anything. We've never heard this interview. I've never heard it.
Me either. And it's Billy Squire. So
yes.
We have to.
All right. So here we go. Here we go.
Some tape here. If you can give me some kind of voice level first, just go ahead and scream through the phone.
Yeah, well, I won't be screaming. This is about what you get. This is my interview voice.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh. All right.
Oh, so he did. We could hear what he said.
So scream through the voice.
Yeah, scream
through
the voice.
No, this is my interview voice.
Oh, you're not going to scream.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Not exactly what you get on record, but...
it's all right.
The best we can do.
Yep. Billy's got an accent, like he's from maybe up east.
Yeah, oh, he definitely is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, as far as your music goes, I think the only thing that gets more airplay around here than Billy Squire is Eddie Money and the commercials. So you're looking pretty good.
Well, I don't know why. Why should Eddie Money get more airplay than me?
Oh.
Oh.
I don't know.
Why should Eddie Money get more
airplay?
What year was this? Do we know?
He was probably kidding, but that up east English accent makes him sound like he's being a jerk, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. But what year do you think this was? 82?
Yeah.
We'll have to work on that. All right. Let's go ahead and start with...
He was just kidding.
...interview, if we could. A man born and raised in Boston, I understand you moved to New York at an early age to form your band Piper.
There he is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Piper.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering what kind of...
Keishi classic from Piper was Rosalie, the song.
And he sang it?
Rosalie!
Did he sing it?
I think so.
Oh.
He was in Piper. He was, you know, a singer.
Yeah.
What kind of personal or business changes had to be made in your life for that move from Boston to New York?
Well, actually, not all that many. Excuse me, because I moved at a relatively early age. I think I was 18 years old. And
he sounds like somebody. I almost got to. He sounds like not John McEnroe. Hmm. Oh God.
I don't know.
In those times, you tend to be a bit young and reckless, and you just do things as you know, as the inclination strikes you. So, I basically packed up a few things, threw them in a
maybe John McEnroe,
threw them in a truck with the rest of a couple of friends of mine. This was actually well before Piper. This was back in longer than I'd care to think. Around 1969 or something. And we just took off and moved down and lived. I think three of us lived in a studio apartment in the East Village. First time I was there, those things actually at that time are insignificant because it's really the excitement of taking something on and embarking on something which is an unknown in your life.
All right. Then we move on and we see the release of the first record, to our knowledge, Tale of the Tape, and that's the first
Billy Squire album.
Right. Now that one went relatively unknown, in a sense, and then comes Don't Say No, double platinum success. What changes took place there in your life again?
Actually, not as many as would be indicated by the comparative differences in commercial success of those two albums, because my basic sensibilities didn't change at all in terms of the direction of my music. I've always been aiming for the same basic formula, which is merging some of the better aspects of pop music with heavy metal. And I've been developing this for a while, and what really happened with Don't Say No was, I think, a situation where the various aspects of making hit records all seemed to finally come together. In other words, I got a band which was the most capable unit that I'd have to help me illustrate my ideas. I started working with Mac, who was able to transfer what I wanted into the technical sense, which was an area which had been lacking for a while. And in general, we were able to fit all the pieces of the puzzle into place. Which is, as I said,
I wonder if he's going to ask him what the song "The Stroke" is about, John. That's what I was thinking.
I bet he does. We'll see.
As I said, of an evolutionary process. I've been building it for a long time, and I think the pieces have been falling into place for a few years, but it's not until you get them all there that people get the entire picture.
I see. And now the follow-up, the Emotions in Motion album, is really just picking up where Don't Say No left off. It's getting a lot of airplay, and I really don't even have too much to ask as it relates to the new album, but I've...
You know what Billy Squire's middle name is?
What is it?
Hayslip.
How do you spell it?
Hayslip.
Hayslip. Now, see, Hayslip. That would have been something that he should have asked him about. Weird. Where'd you get that fucking middle name at, bro?
Should have asked it just like that, too.
I've heard on various interview programs where I've listened to you, and you kind of say that you don't like to explain your lyrics. I was wondering why is that?
I think what many of us do in this the world of songwriting is to create a series of impressions. I write songs about my experiences, yes, and all, but they're also my observations of how what I do or what I see fits into a greater concern. In other words, how other people would be affected in their lives, and so as a result, I feel that to be too specific, to attempt to be too specific and explain something in terms of one particular experience, really narrows.
You're bored?
I am, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. This was 82. This was after the release of Emotion in Motion?
Yes, and that came out in July of 1982. So it could be right after it. Yeah. You know?
Hopefully I'll ask him about Freddie Mercury being on there.
The communication factor involved in it does not allow the people who are hearing the music to perceive it in terms of themselves. It's really very similar to like an impressionistic painter, that you don't do things with one intent. You do things, you're trying to evoke emotions, and
it's art. It's art, man.
Yeah.
Needs no explanation. Come on, man. It would help us, though, as listeners, as fans.
Sometimes it does help.
Yeah, I just want to know what's the song about, man? Why is it such a big deal?
Right.
You know?
You know, we want to know. Some people want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it enhances the appreciation and the enjoyment of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Thought processes within the people who are perceiving your music. I don't do it for myself. I mean, I'm part of it, but I don't. If I did it for myself, I wouldn't bother.
And for the children.
Putting it out, would I?
No. So that makes a lot of sense. In other words, you want each individual to find in your music whatever they can find, and whether
and how it relates to them.
Exactly. Sure.
Well, Jack got it. That's
all
good.
Right. Well, thank God.
All right. That's quite understandable. All right. I basically have two more thoughts to pose to you. One would be the fact that, life on the road, we all know that's, you know, just different from anything anybody could possibly think of. You opened dates for Queen, okay, recently, and then I was to understand that you passed up a chance to go, I guess what, somewhere else with them in order to headline your own dates with Nazareth now this autumn. I was wondering, what is the difference between Billy Squire being an opening act and then Billy Squire being a headliner?
Well, there's certainly a lot more opportunity and freedom for me in terms of the show that I put on, which is not to say that I've never been restricted as an opening act, and I'm very grateful for the chances I've had to the bands who have had me play with them. Going out as a headliner gives me an opportunity to set the stage as I want, so to speak.
Well, by this time, with two albums out.
He was a headliner for sure.
Yeah, because how many, five or six songs off that Don't Say No album?
Monster songs.
Monster, yeah. And then there are two off of this one.
Mm-hmm. Emotions.
Emotions.
Was that the one with?
That's with Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. Maybe that's the second question.
Yeah.
He was going to ask him about Freddie here when he mentioned Queen.
I did too. And Everybody Wants You was the first track off this album.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
And it just gives me a little bit more freedom and room to move. It's also a logical step forward, and it's a challenge because it also takes on a little bit more responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, you're not riding on anyone else's coattails, so to speak. The onus is on you.
Oh. And may I say, as a personal note, I think you picked an excellent choice in Nazareth. They're really big here in St. Louis, and I've always enjoyed their show.
I'm looking forward to it. I think that we could have ourselves a few laughs.
All right. Just keep the booze away from Mr. McCafferty. otherwise, you'll never understand him. He's got that accent is difficult as it is.
That's true.
All right, finally.
Bringing up the alcohol problems of somebody else, Jack.
Interview faux pas number three.
That's funny. Well, Ray McGuire of Trooper tells a story about touring with Nazareth, where Trooper was on stage playing, and the guys from Nazareth, they didn't like the way the show was going because Trooper was doing real well, and one of them walked over and just yanked the plug on their sound system. Yeah.
Wow.
He says that he says Nazareth, he didn't like those guys. But Billy Squire liked them, I guess.
Mm. Whoa, oh,
whoa,
no.
Whoa.
I think you were fast-forwarded.
That accent is difficult as it is.
There we go.
All right, and finally.
Sorry, this is on Reel to Reel for the folks that didn't have any idea, and I accidentally hit the fast-forward button.
I guess I do have a question as it relates to emotions in motion. It said, in a bio I'm reading, it says that you actually locked yourself in your apartment for a period of time. Do you find that that writing is a lonely, or, well, not lonely, I guess.
Solitary.
It's a solitary process for you?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. It's something that I generally have a very clear-cut idea of how Billy Squire, the writer, wants to, perceives Billy Squire, the artist. And as such. It's something which I do bear the responsibility for. Hmm.
Because we see a lot of writers who like to collaborate with others, but you don't find that to be your style.
Well, not in terms of what I do now in this context. I'm not beyond or removed from writing with other people, but that would not be necessarily for a Billy Squire album.
Yes.
It would be, in a collaborative situation.
Plus, I don't like to share writing credits.
Yes,
and
I want
royalties.
All the money. I want all the money.
With anybody.
I would tend to think that collaboration would then extend to the performing of it and the presenting it as such.
I see. All right,
which
man.
Is something which actually you could probably look for in the future. That's just, I'm contemplating a few projects which at the moment are quite secretive, but.
Quite secretive.
Wonder if he was in the process of making that video that was actually almost responsible for destroying his career when he was. There was the one where he
was snapping his fingers.
No, the one where he was laying in bed with all the sheets and the curtains blowing, and he was just writhing around in the bed.
I don't remember that.
It's all kind of white linens and things. No.
Turns me on.
It'll be out in the near future.
All right. Again, thank you very much. I appreciate the insights, and we'll give a lot of people in St. Louis, who don't know that much about you personally, this will help.
Good.
All righty. And one thing, if you want to just go ahead and bang that out.
All right.
Oh, he's going to do promos for the station.
Oh, I've played one of these, and that's where it came from.
Yeah.
Here, play it real quick.
This is Billy Squire. Now, I'm not in St. Louis right now, but when I do get there, I set the dial to 95, KC95.
That's the one right there.
Yeah,
all right. Can you give me that once more? Please.
When I do get there.
Some kind of intro.
Let's see if I say that.
Jack would turn the tape off when he was trying to talk to him, give him instructions on how to do it again.
Right.
Well, how about if I just say it slower? Because I don't want to say, hi, St. Louis. This is Billy Squire. Right. I'm not in St. Louis now.
Good point. All right. So if you say your name
Come on. I won't rush through that.
There you go.
Okay. I'll say, this is Billy Squire. I'll go on, okay?
That
sounds beautiful.
St. Louis now when I get. Okay. Are we rolling?
We are rolling, sir.
This is Billy Squire. I'm not in St. Louis now, but when I do get there, I set that dial to 95, KC95.
Yeah, that'll work. We are rolling.
Okay, so
birthdays and
does he do one for Jack? Let's see what the next one is. Come on, Billy.
Just writing down something here. Okay.
And we're rolling, Billy.
Okay. This is Billy Squire. I'd like to wish all my friends in Real Rock Radio a very happy birthday.
Yeah.
Now I'm talking about KC95 in St. Louis.
Oh.
That was a good one.
That it?
I'll go ahead and roll some tape.
All right.
And
what is this?
Gosh. First of all, let me just ask you to kind of speak up. It does sound like you're calling from L.A.
Okay,
so,
I will.
All right.
Oh,
Freiberg.
It's the next one.
This is David Freiberg.
Yeah, the next one will be in a future podcast, Rusty Young of Poco.
Oh, that wasn't David Freiberg.
No, David Freiberg was before Billy Squire.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Billy Squire. What a run that guy had in the 80s.
He sure did,
tremendous success. And then nothing. After that second album, he was done.
Yeah. And I've seen pictures of him in the last few years of him playing and stuff. I would love to see what he's about right now and live in concert,
He probably put on a hell of a show.
Yeah.
But actually, even before COVID, you didn't hear anything about
him. Yeah, you did.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm John Yule. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUMan, and that's Favaz.
You just follow me.
Follow him.
AMF.
If you see him out in the street, just start following him.
Just follow
me. Mm-hmm. Watch where he goes, what he does, how he acts, and then report it to me, and then I'll embarrass him on the radio.
Please do.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
AMF.
The KC Tapes with U-Man and Favaz. For more on the history of KC, go to KC95.com or the KC mobile app.